Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. It is an honor indeed for the Bank of Greece to be hosting today's meeting of the ECB's Governing Council. And I'm delighted to welcome the members of the press, all of you, to Athens. I hope your stay here will be a productive and an enjoyable one. The meetings of the Governing Council that take place outside of Frankfurt twice a year are an important example of the team spirit that helps underpin the euro system. They allow the Governing Council to conduct its normal work activities while strengthening the cooperation and relations among our respective institutions. Crucially, they are a reminder that the euro system is the monetary authority for the more than 320 million citizens of the euro area and that cooperation among its members is the key to the success of the single monetary policy of the euro area. I now have the pleasure of turning the floor over to the President of the European Central Bank, Jean-Claude Trichet, and the Vice President of the ECB, Lucas Papadimos, who will be reporting on the outcome of today's meeting. Thank you, Jean-Claude. The floor is yours.
Thank you. Thank you very much indeed, Nicolas. First of all, I would like to thank you for your hospitality and to express our very great gratitude to the staff of the National Central Bank of Greece for this excellent organization. Can I say also that we appreciate the relationship that you have with Apollo to get such a marvelous sunny day. The Vice President and I are very pleased to welcome you at this press conference, and we will, as said Nicolas, report on the outcome of the meeting, which was also attended by Commissioner Almunia. On the basis of our regular economic and monetary analysis, we decided at today's meeting to leave the key ECB interest rates unchanged. Inflation rates have risen significantly since the autumn, owing mainly to increases in energy and food prices. As we have said on previous occasions, inflation rates are expected to remain high for a rather protracted period of time before gradually declining again. The latest information confirms our assessment that upside risk to price stability prevail over the medium term in a context of continuing very vigorous money and credit growth. At the same time, the economic fundamentals of the euro area are sound, and incoming macroeconomic data continue to point to moderate but ongoing real GDP growth. However, the level of uncertainty resulting from the turmoil in financial markets remain unusually high, and tensions still persist. Against this background, we emphasize that maintaining price stability in the medium term is our primary objective in accordance with our mandate. The firm anchoring of medium to longer term inflation expectations is of the highest priority. The Governing Council remains strongly committed to preventing second round effects and the materialization of upside risks to price stability over the medium term. We believe that the current monetary policy stance will contribute to achieving our objective. We will continue to monitor very closely all developments over the coming weeks. Allow me to explain our assessment in greater detail, starting with the economic analysis. The latest data and survey information on economic activity confirm previous expectations of moderate but ongoing growth in the first half of 2008. In particular, industrial production data for the first month of the year showed resilience, while economic sentiment generally continued to soften. Overall, the euro area economy has sound fundamentals and does not suffer from major imbalances. In line with available forecasts, both domestic and foreign demand are expected to support ongoing real GDP growth in the euro area in 2008, albeit to a lesser extent than during 2007. While moderating, growth in the world economy is expected to remain resilient, benefiting in particular from strong growth in emerging economies. This should continue to support euro area external demand. Meanwhile, investment growth in the euro area should provide ongoing support to economic activity as capacity utilization remains solid and profitability in the non-financial corporate sector has been sustained. At the same time, employment and labor force participation have increased significantly and unemployment rates have fallen to levels not seen for 25 years. This supports real disposable income and thus consumption growth, although purchasing power is being dampened by the impact of higher energy and food prices. The uncertainty surrounding this outlook for economic growth remains high and downside risks prevail. In particular, risks relate to the potential for the financial market turbulence to have a more negative impact on the real economy than previously anticipated. Moreover, downside risks stem from the dampening impact on consumption and investment of further unanticipated increases in energy and food prices. Risks also arise from protectionist pressures and the possibility of disorderly developments owing to global imbalances. With regard to price developments, annual HICP inflation has remained above 3% for the past 6 months. According to Eurostat's flash estimate, it was 3.3% in April 2008. This outturn confirms the ongoing strong short-term upward pressure on inflation, resulting largely from sharp increases in energy and food prices at the global level in recent months. Looking ahead on the basis of current future prices for these commodities, the annual HICP inflation rate is likely to remain significantly above 2% in the coming month, moderating only gradually over the course of 2008. Accordingly, we are currently experiencing a rather protracted period of high annual rates of inflation. In order to ensure that current high inflation rates remain temporary, it is imperative that they do not become entrenched in longer-term expectations or lead to broadly based second-round effects in wage and price setting. The risks to the outlook for inflation over the medium term remain clearly on the upside. These risks include the possibility of further rises in energy and food prices, as well as for increases in administered prices and indirect taxes beyond those foreseen thus far. Most importantly, there is a risk that price and wage setting behavior could add to inflationary pressures. In particular, the pricing power of firms, notably in market segments with low competition, may prove stronger than currently expected. Moreover, higher than expected wage growth may emerge, taking into account high capacity utilization, tight labor market conditions, and the risk of second round effects owing to the high level of current inflation rates. Against this background, it is imperative that all the parties concerned in both the private and the public sector meet their responsibilities. Wage setting needs to take into account productivity developments, the still high level of unemployment in many economies, and price competitiveness positions. Moderate labor cost increases are particularly necessary in countries which have lost price competitiveness in recent years. Second-round effects stemming from the impact of higher energy and food prices on price and wage-setting behavior must be avoided. In this context, the Governing Council is concerned about the existence of schemes in which nominal wages are indexed to consumer prices. Such schemes involve the risk of upward shocks in inflation, leading to a wage price spiral which would be detrimental to employment and competitiveness in the countries concerned. The Governing Council therefore calls for such schemes to be avoided. The Governing Council is monitoring wage negotiations in the euro area with particular attention. In the view of the Governing Council, continued responsible wage agreements are of key importance to preserve price stability in the medium term and thereby the purchasing power of all euro area citizens. The monetary analysis confirms the prevailing upside risks to price stability at medium to longer term horizons. Annual M3 growth remained very vigorous at 10.3% in March, supported by the continued strong growth of MFI loans to the private sector. At the same time, annual M1 growth continues to moderate in March, reflecting higher short-term interest rates, which encourage further shifts from overnight into time deposits. While the impact of the flat yield curve and other temporary factors suggest that annual M3 growth currently overstates the underlying pace of monetary expansion, nonetheless, even after taking such effects into account, a broad-based assessment of the latest data confirms that the underlying rate of money and credit growth remains strong. The growth of household borrowing has moderated over recent months, reflecting the impact of higher short-term interest rates and cooling housing markets in several parts of the euro area. However, the growth of loans to non-financial corporations has remained very robust. While some future moderation can be expected in the light of tightening financing conditions and slower economic growth, bank borrowing by euro area non-financial corporations grew at an annual rate of 15% in the year to March 2008, and the flow of loans in recent months has been strong. For the time being, there is little evidence that the financial market turbulence seen since early August 2007 has strongly influenced the development of broad money and loans. Continued strong loan growth to non-financial corporations suggests the availability of bank credits to euro area firms has not been significantly impaired by the financial turmoil thus far. Further data and analysis will be required in order to obtain a more complete picture of the impact of the financial market developments on banks' balance sheets, financing conditions, and money and credit growth. To sum up, a cross-check of the outcome of the economic analysis with that of the monetary analysis clearly confirms the assessment that upside risks to price stability prevail over the medium term in a context of very vigorous money and credit growth and with no significant signs of supply constraints on bank loans. The economic fundamentals of the euro area are sound, and incoming macroeconomic data continue to point to moderate but ongoing real GDP growth. However, the level of uncertainty resulting from the turmoil in financial markets remains high. Against this background, we emphasize that the firm anchoring of medium to longer term inflation expectations is of the highest priority to the Governing Council. We believe that the current monetary policy stance will contribute to achieving this objective. The Governing Council remains strongly committed to preventing second-round effects and the materialization of upside risks to price stability over the medium term. We will continue to monitor very closely all developments over the coming weeks. Regarding fiscal policies, The latest forecast by the European Commission points to a rise in the euro area general government deficit ratio in 2008, followed by a further small increase in 2009. This deterioration in part reflects a less favorable economic environment and a likely reversal of windfall revenues accrued in past years. However, it also reflects a standstill in fiscal consolidation and new deficit increasing measures in a number of countries with fiscal imbalances, including some with high deficits. For several countries, the attainment of the country-specific medium-term objectives by 2010 at the latest, which is the commitment made by euro area governments in Berlin in April 2007, is clearly at risk. In these countries, much more ambitious policies are imperative. For all countries, prudent fiscal policy would also help to counteract current inflationary pressures. At the current juncture, it is also important to reinforce the structural reform agenda, in particular with a view to fostering market integration and to reducing rigidities in product and labour markets. Policy initiatives aimed at enhancing competition in market segments with low competition, such as services and energy, would allow pricing behaviour to adjust and thus contribute to lower inflation pressures. Furthermore, policies to increase trend productivity growth would contribute to smaller unit labour cost increases and ultimately also to higher employment. We are now at your disposal for questions.
Mr. President, I was wondering if the decision today to keep interest rates unchanged was unanimous, if the possibility of a rate hike or a rate cut was discussed, if the word vigilance is still in the vocabulary of the Council. And I have a question for Greece, if you care to confirm that you had a meeting with the Bank of Greece employees today regarding their problems with the Social Security Fund and the efforts of the government to pass the new resolutions. So I was wondering if you can confirm the meeting, and if yes, what did you discuss? What did you tell them about it?
Even more questions, madam, but that makes a lot. Huh? First of all, let me confirm to you that, as usual, we have examined the situation, which is, since a number of months, particularly multidimensional, if I may. We were unanimous in taking the decision to let our interest rates at the present level. As I said, on behalf of the Governing Council, we believe, and I said that also last time, that the current monetary policy stance will contribute to achieving our objective. I would say that at the moment I am speaking, I have absolutely no reason to say that vigilance has disappeared from our potential vocabulary. It is an expression that we can certainly utilize when we judge that it is time to utilize it. I would also say that we are in a posture of permanent alertness, if I may. And everybody knows, and all observers know, that we will do any time what we judge appropriate to be faithful to our mandate, deliver price stability in the medium term, and be credible in that delivery. As regards Greece, I would only say under the Nicolas and Lucas, you add, of course, all what is relevant, but I would only say that at this stage we have, as you know, a position of the Governing Council which has been made public and sent to the government, and I would say that we are expecting a response of the Minister of Finance at this stage. And that's what we said. Thank you very much.
The markets no longer expect a rate cut this year, and I wonder if you feel comfortable with that view.
I said what I had to say. It's absolutely clear that we believe that the present monetary policy stance will contribute to achieving our objective. Please.
Mr. President, could you tell us whether the recent downgrade of the growth forecast by the European Commission, if that fits with your outlook on the economy, and also whether this outlook has worsened since March?
We will produce ourselves, and we made public and display the staff projections that are being prepared, and the rendezvous is for next month. We will see what are our new staff projections. And at this stage, all what I would say for the present year is that the average growth, which is projected by the international institutions, and I could take a number of them, including the OECD, including the private sector, would be reasonably close to what our own staff has published in the last projections. And this is largely due to the fact that the first quarter appears to be resilient, as I have said, which whatever the slowing down of growth in the second semester permits to have an average rate of growth for 08, which again is very much in the view of observers, public and private, in line with what we had said previously. But I don't want to anticipate on what we will display next time. It's work in progress, if I may, and a number of new information are coming. They are mixed, if I may. It's at the global level as well as at the European level. From time to time, we have good news in comparison with expectations. From time to time, we have less good news, obviously. And it is true, again, outside the euro area as well as inside the euro area. You have noted, for instance, that the service sector PMI was a little bit better than anticipated in April, that the EC service confidence indicators was a little bit less flattering than was anticipated. The consumer confidence in March was unchanged. I mean, again, we have a number of indications that are coming. We have to take stock of all those indications, and we will publish in our next meeting the new staff projections. Thank you. I'm sorry.
Thank you, Mr. President. I was very impressed by the use of the word augured in your last statement a month ago. Would you care to do that for the next 12 months as far as the Eurozone being the oasis of stability, both in monetary and in GDP terms, in the whole world right now? And secondly, the word was augured. A-U-G-E-R-E-D. It was in your last statement, a month ago.
I think so, frankly speaking. I don't see what...
It's another word for prophesizing. But...
I have no memory of that, but I have a number of witnesses that are in this room. perhaps you have a question. Whatever I said last time, what is the question then?
And the second question is, can there be real inflation without an accommodative monetary policy on behalf of the central banking authorities?
A Again, first question, frankly speaking, I don't see that I have pronounced the word augured, and I certainly referred also to the staff projections and the projections which were made, as you know, in our own concept. We, at the level of the Governing Council, do not underwrite any particular projections, even the staff projections. We are taking stock of all the information available coming from our own staff, which is a very important input, and coming from the public and private sector. On the second point, I would say our monetary policy is designed to deliver price stability in the medium term. It is our mandate. It is what the treaty is calling upon us. I have to say that it is what the people of Europe is asking us to deliver. All the information we have, including survey, show to which extent our 320 million fellow citizens that Nicolas alluded to are very, very eager to have price stability in the medium term. And again, I have to say also that it is important because not only it is our mandate, not only it is what the people of Europe is calling upon us, but it is also what is very important in the present turbulences that we are experiencing in the financial market. A solid anchoring of inflation expectations permit to avoid volatility in the medium and long-term market interest rates, and avoiding such volatility and getting stability in this component of global finance and European finance is very, very important. Thank you very much, Madame.
Oh yeah, there we are. Inflationary pressures and phrase them as temporary. They clearly have to seem to have persisted already longer than expected. Where do you take the confidence from that we're indeed going to get over the hump? Do you see any signs of easing inflationary pressures even though they're still high? Secondly, in terms of the financial crisis, we're now three quarters of a year, give or take, into the present liquidity crisis. Do you see, what's your latest verdict on where we are in this crisis? Do you see any easing of the liquidity situation at all? If one looks at the Eurozone money market, it doesn't really seem like it. And thirdly, we're at the brink, or almost only a few weeks away from an important anniversary. It's a 10-year birthday of the European Central Bank. If you had a birthday wish list, what would be on it for the next 10 years? Thank you.
On the last question, I will give you a rendezvous, an important rendezvous, precisely at the moment of the celebration. It would be a unique occasion to try to say what has happened over the last 10 years and to see what are the perspectives. So it's a very important rendezvous that we have for the 2nd of June. As regards the first question, I would say, and it's not new because I said that in previous occasions, inflation rates are expected to remain high for a rather protracted period of time before gradually declining again. And that is clearly what we see. We are qualifying the situation as, again, high level, elevated level of inflation for a rather protracted period of time, and then it gradually declines. On the present financial turbulences, which you remember since the very beginning, and we have the memory of the start of these turbulences and what we said and what we explained in September last year after the start of the turbulences in August, this ongoing process of market correction of great amplitude with episodes of high level of volatility, episodes of a very high level of turbulences, and elements of overshooting that we see on a number of markets is again an ongoing phenomenon. We are observing elements that are in some respect encouraging and seems to show that a number of markets are going progressively more I would say, back to normal or closer to what would be a normal functioning, but it is not unanimous. It is not all the markets concerned. And in a domain which is, for us, important, which is the tensions that we are observing in the money market that are not originating in the money market but are reflected in the money market and are originating out of the money market, we continue to see persistence. I said that on behalf of the Governing Council a moment ago. We continue to see persistent tensions. And that is, I would say, one of the illustrations of this ongoing process that we are observing. As you know, we have taken a number of decisions, including across the Atlantic, to cope with this persistent tension. I think all market participants, all institutions know that we are there and that we are alert in this domain. Again, it's an ongoing correction, and I will not qualify differently the phenomenon that we have in front of us. One of the main reasons why we have the market tensions in our own money market and interbank money market clearly is that a large number of institutions, and not only banks or financial institutions, are expressing a preference for liquidity, which is very, very strong and abnormal in terms of historical observations. And this preference for liquidity is continuing to influence all the markets. Thank you. Sir.
Mr. President, you will need translation to understand the question. You will need translation to understand the question.
Okay, fine.
Κύριε Πρόεδρε, ήθελα να ρωτήσω δεδομένη συγκυρία στην Ευρωζώνη. Yeah. The fourth one. Oh no, the first one. Yeah. Κύριε Πρόεδρε, δεδομένη της συγκυρίας στην Ευρωζώνη, την οποία περιγράψατε στην αρχή, θα θέλετε να κάνετε κάποιο σχόλιο για οικονομίες της Ευρωζώνης οι οποίες διατηρούν για πολλά χρόνια υψηλά ελλείμματα στο ζύγιο των τρεχουσών συναλλαγών. Αυτό είναι το ένα ερώτημα. Και ένα δεύτερο, αν μου επιτρέπετε, η εκτίμησή σας είναι ότι στο χώρο της Ευρωζώνης το μεγαλύτερο μέρος των ζημιών στο χρηματοπιστωτικό σύστημα έχει ήδη καταγραφεί ή μένει να καταγραφεί.
Thank you very much indeed. For the second question, let me repeat what I just said. It's an ongoing process of market correction which is complex, and I don't want to reiterate what I just said. On the economies of the euro area, I would insist on something I said on behalf of the Governing Council, which is important for all economies, and including Greece, of course, but for all economies, which is that particular attention should be given to cost competitiveness indicator and to relative competitiveness indicator, particularly in countries or economies where you could observe some deterioration of that position during the last period of time, and where you could also observe that we have had a current account deficit of important magnitude. You refer precisely to current account deficit, and where we have also a level of employment which is not necessarily satisfactory. So these are major criteria. The level of the competitiveness, the level of unemployment, the level of the imbalances that may are coming from the absence of sufficient competitiveness. It is again a message for absolutely all economies members of the euro area that the Governing Council think important to convey, but it is of course the case also here. Mr. Atkins.
Ralph Atkins from the Financial Times. Just a few things to follow up, if I may. Firstly, you didn't answer the question earlier about whether anyone proposed a cut or an increase in interest rates today. If that was not a deliberate slip, I'll give you a chance to answer that one again now. Secondly, if I could...
Could you repeat
The very first question was whether anyone proposed an increase or suggested a reduction in interest rates today.
We're unanimous in deciding to maintain rates as they are. It was the first question. As always, we have examined the situation under all angles, but there was absolutely no call for anything but the decision that we have taken here.
Sorry, follow up. Some of the information that I believe you would have had available today, I understand you would have had an up-to-date bank lending survey. I wonder if you could give a flavour of that. You seem to have dropped the reference to, or at least one reference, to the fact that there's no signs of the credit crunch restricting credit available to companies. I wonder if that's still your position. I also understand you would have had a latest professional forecasts forecasters survey of inflation expectations and whether they're still showing that inflation expectations are anchored. And then could I just follow up with another question about foreign exchange markets and whether you would agree that US and European interests are now closer aligned in favour of a stronger dollar. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much indeed. On the bank lending survey, you're absolutely right. We will publish the last bank lending survey tomorrow at 10 a.m. And we had a hint at what is likely to be observed in this survey. I would say that we see a continued increase in the net tightening of credit standards for loans in the first quarter. If my memory is exact, we could have a 49% indicator instead of a 41 in the last quarter of last year. So further increase in the net tightening, in line with what we have observed during the recent period. And I would say that the loans to household and house purchase are also increasing, even if the difference between the tightening and the absence of tightening is a little bit meager, 33% instead of 21. But it's also going up, as you see, quite substantially. It was 21%. In Q4, it is in Q1 of this year, 33. So this indicates very clearly that we have a continuous tightening. It does not fit very well, as I said, with the fact that we see some of the counterparts of the monetary aggregates continuing to be extraordinarily dynamic. I mentioned the non-financial corporate outstanding loans growing at the pace of 15%. It's more than last month. Last month it was 14.8%. So we are in a universe where we see that apparent paradox. Now, we believe that there are a number of explanations. We are not 100% sure that we have captured all factors behind and all explanations, but it's clear that we have some substitution because a number of non-financial corporate had decided not to issue bonds and papers in general, including commercial papers, shorter-term commercial papers, as they used to do. So we have there an element of substitution which explains this dynamism of the loans. We certainly also, and that of course is associated with the difficulty on the financial market, we have also certainly drawing on previous lines that or credit that were decided before syndicated loans, that were decided before. We can see also probably drawing on confirmed credit or standby credit that are not new decisions but old decisions, but on which the non-financial corporate are drawing, and we might have other explanation. But if all this is true, at a time we should see not only the absence of a continuing acceleration of this outstanding loans to non-financial corporate, but the start of a deceleration. But I would not engage myself in this domain at this stage. I think it's, again, it's work in progress, even if we see perhaps a little bit clearer what are the underlying phenomena. I responded to two of your questions. Exchange rate. On exchange rate, as you know, during the last meditation we had at the level of the G7, we changed the wording. I signed this communique. I was asked myself, what does it mean? I said, it speaks by itself. And I also mentioned that I was taking for real and serious what was said by the U.S. authorities, the President, the Secretary of the Treasury, and the Chairman of the Fed, namely that a strong dollar was in the interest of the United States. I said that before. I continue to say that, and if it is considered by a number of observers, Mr. Atkins, as serious and convincing, I would be happy, of course. Thank you, sir, if you wish. Yeah.
Thank you, Mr. President. Hirose from Kyodo News Agency. Let me clarify a bit about your inflation assessment, because this time it seems the wording was changed. A rather protracted period of time and temporarily was kind of deceded. In the second reference as well, the temporarily came afterwards compared with the last month's assessment. So, in essence, did you change your inflation assessment to a more severe one? This is my first question. And the second question is, as it notes, the most recent inflation data was a bit milder than months before. It was 3.3 in Eurozone, and in Germany it was a little bit down as well. What do you make of this decrease? Do you think this has an implication that the rather protracted area of the high inflation will be shortened, or anything else? Do you have anything to make out of it? Thank you.
First of all, I would tell you that I don't know why. Okay, no problem. I don't know why you say that we have a different view of the inflation risk and the inflation as it is materializing than last time. I would say we are very much in the same mood, and we don't draw particular conclusion from the fact that the headline inflation came down from 3.6 to 3.3. I would say the best qualification of our attitude as regards this short-term evolution of the CPI would be that we didn't change our vision today in comparison with last meeting. We continue to consider that inflation will be for a protracted period of time high, as is seen. Again, I don't draw a lot of consequences from what we are observing. We have a volatility that is there. We have to remain very, very cautious and prudent. Of course, it will then gradually decline. That's absolutely clear, and it was our judgment last time as well as this time. I think I responded to your two questions, sir. Sir. Yeah.
My name is Carter Doherty with the International Herald Tribune. One question for Mr. Trichet. In the statement, you refer to the possibility of high inflation rates becoming entrenched in longer-term expectations. There is some discussion now of to what extent that is taking place. Of course, it is difficult to separate from what is higher inflation expectations and what is financial market chaos. And I wondered if you could give us some insight into how you pull these two things apart and conclude, presumably, that at this point in time you do not see that being entrenched. And I have a second question for Mr. Gaganis, since this has been an opportunity for those of us based in Frankfurt to acquaint ourselves with the commanding heights of the Greek economy this week. You're coming up on a transition of your own, and I wondered if you could comment on what you would like to see from Greece in the coming years. Of course, you and Mr. Papademos were large participants in the macroeconomic stabilization of Greece over the last 10 to 15 years. Of course, now the real fun begins with all sorts of structural reforms that presumably Greece needs to undertake. I wondered if you could give us some insight into what you would like to see happen when you look back in 5 or 10 years from now.
Thank you. I respond to your first question. We, and also to Mr. Atkins' question, because I didn't mention that as regards the survey of professional forecasters, it will be published the 15th of May in our monthly bulletin. As you know, we are following the inflation expectations from a large number of channels and indicators. We have the survey of professional forecasters. We have a number of private sector analysis and appreciations and judgment. And we have also the financial markets. From what I see in the domain of the survey of professional forecasters is that clearly, there is an impact of the level of headline inflation that we are observing today and of the fact that this high level of inflation has been observed in the past since quite a number of months under all the influences that we know. But at this stage, I would say that the medium-long-term inflation expectations that we can extract from surveys are in line with our mandate and our definition of price stability. But we have to remain constantly alert. It is no time for complacency in any respect. And we are, again, considering, as I said, that the anchoring of inflation expectations is absolutely fundamental for us to deliver price stability in the medium term. From the financial markets, we have also indications that the volatility has been quite substantial. When you extract, you could extract the break-even over 5 years, the break-even over 10 years, the break-even that you extract from the 5 years in 5 years' time, which are associated. I would say, again, in this respect, conclusion would be alertness is extraordinarily important. We have indications that are from time to time a little bit contradictory. It goes up, it goes down, but in any case, we even when we withdraw from the break-even, the insurance premium that are embedded in the break-even, again, I would say no time for complacency in any respect. Perhaps, Lucas, if you permit, we
yes,
can
look at... Thank you. I've published my annual report on the 22nd of April, and so my views are clearly expressed there. Nevertheless, because this report is in Greek, and I assume that you did not read it, I would give you an outline of what our views are there, and my views in particular. I think the challenge for Greece is to maximize the benefits of participation in a monetary union by making further progress along the path of reforms. It is for Greece particularly important to bring down the relatively high inflation rate in order to improve its competitive position. We have persistently having an inflation rate which was above the euro area average since we've adopted the euro. And to achieve this objective, it is particularly important to continue on a sustainable and credible path of fiscal consolidation and to improve further fiscal performance by reducing further Greece's high government debt ratio. And, of course, there's another issue on which my views are well known in this country at any rate, and that is I believe that public finances should have, in this country should have sufficient room for maneuver in order to better cope with expected substantial increase in age-related expenditure, because Greece is faced with one of the worst problems of aging population, which will have sufficient will have serious consequences for the both healthcare and for the pension system expenditure, and it is important, of course, both in the public and private sectors to attain moderate labour cost developments. I have been criticized for that because people believe that we suggest a wage freeze or a cut in wages. We do not. We suggest labor moderation. We suggest that labor cost developments should take into account productivity growth, labor market conditions and developments in competitive countries. This is a standard position of the Governing Council, if I may say so, Mr. President, and of the Bank of Greece all these years. And, of course, attention must also focus on overcoming the structural constraints on economic growth and job creations. And, of course, there is an issue of fostering labor force participation and the strengthening of competition in product markets. Product markets are not functioning properly in Greece in many sectors. And, of course, this will help keep the profit margins consistent with the price stability. And, of course, improvement in the functioning of labour markets is also very important, particularly in Greece. Thank you.
Thank you. Pardon me.
Sorry, could I follow up with one quick thing regarding inflation expectations, which is there a policy recipe that you would recommend to member governments of the Eurozone which would cushion the blow of higher inflation without contributing to inflation, higher inflation in the future in the form of second-round effects? There are suggestions in your home country of dealing with alleged collusion by food merchants. There's suggestions in Germany that social insurance contributions be reduced. Is there any persuasive steps that you believe national governments could take to cushion the blow of higher inflation without making your job more difficult?
Let me say again that as far as the Governing Council is concerned, what the Governing Council said today is it is imperative that all the parties concerned in both the private and public sector meet their responsibilities. Wage setting needs to take into account productivity developments, the still high level of unemployment in many economies, and price competitiveness positions. And we say also that moderate labour cost increases are particularly necessary in countries which have lost price competitiveness in recent years. So that is a very, very strong message that we are shipping to all countries. And of course, some are more eligible to those recommendations than others, because we are precisely taking a number of items, including this price competitiveness indicators. As regards your implicit question on whether it is appropriate to offset, if I understand, some price increases in oil, in commodities, or in other areas by operation that would artificially, if I may, lower some other elements, I would say no, it's not the position that we take. Of course, we recommend all partners, including governments, to not to create additional problems by augmenting indirect taxation or augmenting administrative prices, but we don't call for abnormal offsetting, exceptional offsetting of some of the increases, because in most cases this corresponds to a real transfer, and we have to accept that. You remember those who tried in the first oil shock occasion in 73 and 74 to cancel, if I may, the impact of the oil shock in their own economy, did very poorly afterwards. And we can make really the difference between those who have recognized that prices had changed and it has to be recognized and accepted, and those who thought that they could protect their economy from the real transfer, which was explicit with this first oil shock, and second oil shock is exactly the same story. And you know also, I said that already, but the mass unemployment in Europe started with the inappropriate response to the first oil shock. That is something which is very well documented. But there was a question for Lucas.
Related to the one that was raised for Governor Garganos on the Greek economy, I should first say that there have been a number of positive developments over the last few years. Greece has experienced robust economic growth, and it has made further progress towards fiscal consolidation and structural adjustment. On the negative side, the weak element, the weak feature of the Greek economy has been the low degree of competitiveness as measured by a variety of indicators. And the persistence of significant divergences in unit labor cost over a number of years has had adverse implications for inflation performance as well as for the competitiveness position. Now, the cumulative loss of competitiveness over a number of years is reflected in the widening of the current account deficit that has reached very high levels as a percent of GDP, and it may not be sustainable. Now, so far, the negative impact on economic activity from the external imbalances has been partly or fully offset by the positive influence of other domestic factors that have stimulated economic activity. But as the influence of these factors may decline over time, then the adverse effects of the external imbalances on activity and employment will be more felt. So what this is important, and I think what I'm saying is very much in line with what was said earlier on by President Trichet and Governor Ferganas, is the importance of pursuing policies that will strengthen competitiveness, which, as you suggested, first of all, involves further structural reforms to foster higher productivity and strengthen competition in markets, as well as the moderate labor cost policies, which are particularly important in helping to restore competitiveness over time. So a combination of policies, both in the labor markets but also in the product markets, in order to strengthen competition, foster productivity, and ensure wage moderation in order to strengthen competitiveness, I think is the path to take in the years to come.
Thank you very much. Perhaps we can take three last questions, please.
Chairman Trichet, are you at all worried about the future of the bank's independence, especially now that Prime Minister Berlusconi is expected to join Nicolas Sarkozy in asking the ECB to take the government's view more, to be more concerned about the government's view? And are you going to miss Governor Gargana's come next July? Thank you.
We have never been alarmed. We have a treaty. The treaty says that we are independent. The treaty says that we cannot receive instructions and we cannot even ask for instructions. The treaty says that no entity, including governments, even can try to influence the ECB, its president, its vice president, the members of the governing council, the members of the executive board. So this is clear. And if you look at the market participants, observers, investors, savers the world over, they have absolutely not the single doubt that we are independent and that we are fiercely attached, of course, to respecting the will of the European democracies, because we did not invent our own independence. We were given a mandate, and we were given independence by the European democracies very solemnly and in a way which has been, I would say, exemplary in terms of precisely democratic decision-making. Not to mention that the 320 million fellow citizens are extremely attached to us doing our job. And the last survey that we did, I said that already publicly, is that to the statement, do you consider important the ECB independence from government to deliver price stability, we have 78% of our fellow citizens that are on this line. Madam.
Aisha Farlal of Dow Jones. President Trichet, you have said growth is likely to be ongoing, though moderating. Could you please tell us whether the Council's baseline scenario is still one of growth close to or just below potential for this year and the next? And also, a second question is, if higher energy and food costs persist for longer than anticipated, would it be effective for the ECB to tighten policy to target inflation, which is being generated by prices beyond its control?
Thank you very much. I already responded, of course, to those questions, and have nothing to add that would give a different view. We are very, very clear on what is, again, our mandate, what is the fact that we believe that the present monetary policy stance will permit us to achieve our objective. And that being said, we are constantly alert, as everybody knows. Madam.
Thank you. Mr. Mavromati from a Greek newspaper, Kerdos. Mr. President, allow me to drive you back to on the monetary policy, and I would like to ask you, do you
I'm back.
Where is it?
What I see, again, as I said, is that our fellow citizens are not happy with the present level of CPI, of headline inflation, and understandably so. And they consider price stability of extreme importance. They have decided to give us that mandate. Again, the mandate was given by the European democracies. But all survey we have everywhere in Europe, in the 15 countries, show that that they are calling for price stability. So we are faithful to our mandate. We might see a number of judgments on what we are doing here and there. Some perhaps are simultaneously asking for more price stability and more, I would say, accommodative monetary policy, because they are not called to be necessarily coherent. But we are called, of course, ourselves to be coherent, and it is, of course, what the Governing Council has done in the past. We trust, again, that what we are doing at the moment I'm speaking and the decision we took today is the decision which will permit us to achieve our objective of price stability in the medium run. Thank you very much, Madam. Pardon me, last point. Yeah.
Given the fact that the oil prices are expected to remain high, even rising to $150 per barrel, some people say, some analysts say $200 per barrel, and the fact that food prices are also on the rise, would you consider raising the threshold of 2% for the acceptable level of inflation, just to give you a room for maneuver to exercise your monetary policy?
It's a question to which I have already responded in the past. It is totally excluded, of course, because I said that to which extent the solid anchoring of inflation expectations was of the essence to be up to our mandate and to be up to what the people of Europe is calling upon us. If we would follow the line you are implicitly suggesting, we would unanchor ourselves all inflationary expectations. And then we could make the thought experiment. Say that we follow this advice and we pronounce another figure for the definition of price stability, then immediately all inflation expectations are unanchored arithmetically. Then there is the risk premia. If they can change their definition of price stability, they can change it again. So what is the protection against future changes? And then all interest rates, medium and long term, would immediately jump up. So it is certainly not what we could envisage for 1 second. Thank you. Thank you very much. It was a very good last question, obviously.